Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, Australia's very first IVF baby, Candice Reed, turned 40 this year. I know. In 2015, the average age of women undergoing IVF in Australia was 35.8 years. Around 1 in 23 children born in Australia were IVF babies, and more than half were born using frozen embryos. For many, of course, it's been well worth it. Women and couples were given the chance to conceive children when previously it was thought to be impossible. Since the very first test tube baby was born in England in 1978, in vitro fertilisation has offered a lifeline for many couples in this situation. It's also being used increasingly these days by gay couples, also single women, wanting to become parents as well. In fact, it's estimated the 5 millionth baby to be born worldwide using assisted reproduction technologies took its first breath last year. That's quite a crop, huh? How easy is it to have a child via IVF? Is it a solution for all infertile couples? And can it still be an ultimately disappointing experience? As we know, in the past, it has been for a number of women. What are the new technologies emerging in the field? How much better is it? And how much better might it get? Our guest tonight is Associate Professor Peter Ellingworth, who's the Medical Director of IVF Australia. Peter, great to have you in.
Good evening.
And welcome to Nightlife. And sisters Beck and Felicity Barnes. Now, this is quite a story. Felicity was an egg donor for Beck, and as a result, Beck was able to have her second child. Felicity and Beck, great to see you.
Thank you. Hi.
Welcome to the program. Peter, let's get a few nuts and bolts down first, I suppose. How common's infertility anyway?
About 1 in 6 couples who are trying to conceive have trouble conceiving.
Trouble that's going to be a permanent problem or just...
Not always. A lot of the time, even couples who take a long time to have their first child and come up and have tests and investigations and are understandably concerned about it all can still end up conceiving naturally.
Because we've all heard the story, haven't we, of people who try and then have one and then suddenly it seems to be a lot easier for the second one.
Yeah, very much so.
Do we understand why?
No, nobody does.
I'm not going to venture into the story of the stork, but I mean, but that's as good an explanation as any at the moment, is it?
It is. And I think one of the great frustrations for couples who are struggling to have their family is the sheer random nature of what goes on. That they may spend years trying to have their first child, watching their friend conceive every 12 months or so. They may even go through IVF and have a terrible struggle trying to get pregnant with IVF, while somebody else comes through and maybe manages 2 or 3 children from one IVF cycle. Mm.
And look, I've spoken to women in the past myself, and I'm sure you've heard this story thousands of times of the terribly damaging effect that an inability to conceive can have on couples, particularly women, from many of whom feel all sorts of senses of loss at the fact that they weren't able to conceive, don't they?
Oh, extraordinary. I think one of the great senses that people feel is an exclusion from society, that they're used to seeing all their friends and their families, children growing up, having family get-togethers, and they are sitting on the edge, feeling on the outside of it all.
Mm. Yes, and women often feel, I think, later in perhaps their fertile period of their life, that they always expected that they'd be part of that too, and that all of a sudden they're not, and there doesn't seem to be any prospect of it either. And there's a terrible sense of loss, of being excluded, as you say.
Yeah, very much so. And days such as Mother's Day and Father's Day, which we all, and even Christmas, which we all, in the rest of society, view as being happy occasions, can be enormous senses of days of grieving and sadness.
Mm. Give us a quick 101 on the procedure, because IVF doesn't fix all fertility issues, does it?
No, it doesn't. The big challenge that it doesn't fix is problems with eggs. In IVF, what happens is a woman will take medications to stimulate her eggs to grow. So she has 8 to 10 eggs that are collected in a minor procedure. They're taken into the laboratory and joined by a variety of routes with some sperm. Embryos are grown nowadays normally for about 5 days. The best single embryo is normally transferred, and any remaining embryos are frozen for later use.
And then those embryos are then the fertilised embryo is re-implanted.
Yep, 5 days after the eggs have been collected.
And then hopefully they'll proceed to a normal pregnancy.
That's the aim.
Hmm. This is where the rub in the sense of success rates, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And once upon a time, they weren't as probably as good as some people had hoped for. What are the success rates like these days?
It absolutely depends on who the patient is. A younger woman who's coming through to do IVF in her late 20s or her early 30s can be highly confident of a good outcome from it. A woman in her mid to late 30s, it becomes much harder. And for a woman who's gone past 40, IVF is really about hope rather than expectation.
Really? Is that well explained to women at the time? Or do you, if they want to go ahead with it, then do people like you say, okay?
I hope it's well explained. I think one of our big duties as doctors who are seeing people struggling with fertility and looking at the various options is they get a very realistic appraisal of what the options can and may not do.
Just having interviewed people over the years, one of the things that often worries me is these stories of celebrity women, much older celebrity women who are suddenly having babies in their mid-40s. And, you know, the implication is, well, if you've got enough money or access to things, these things are possible. But that's not so, is it?
No, it's not. And one of the things that IVF can't do is do anything about aging eggs.
Mm.
And that becomes a limiting factor for so many couples who are struggling to have a family.
Mm. Roughly, when do eggs start to decline in the expectation that they might proceed to a full gestation?
Look, 20-year-old eggs will always do better than 30-year-old eggs, will always do better than 40-year-old eggs. But generally, from about the late 30s onwards, it starts to be much more of a struggle.
Mm. Yeah. Do you see many older women coming to see you? Or is it? What's the typical profile of a woman who comes to see you?
The mean age of a woman doing IVF is 36. So quite a lot are older.
Mm.
And it's a really important point to make, that this is never a conscious decision that the woman herself has made. It's nearly always because she's not had an opportunity to try before that point.
Mm. What sort of women come and see you? Are they in couples? Are they on their own?
A mixture. We see many couples. Often, if the couples are older, they may just have met. They may just have got into a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We see single women, generally in mid-30s, who are starting to look at the future and are starting to become a bit fearful about what the future may hold as a single woman.
Mm. Yeah, it's a technology that's surrounded by so much emotion because human reproduction is that, isn't it? Let's talk about some emotion with Beck and Felicity Barnes too, because this is really quite some story, which I'll get them to tell. Becky, you wanted a second child.
Yeah.
What was the problem?
I was 42 at that point, and we were having trouble getting pregnant, so we went to see our doctor. And I had a few tests that showed that I had a chromosomal disorder that I hadn't been aware of with my previous pregnancy, which just reduced my chances even more.
So hang on, your first child was born naturally?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep, and very lucky now that we know my history.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, we tried two rounds of IVF with my eggs, and we didn't even get an egg that was worth testing for the chromosomal disorder. So there was no way I was going to get pregnant again naturally, or with IVF with my eggs. So my sister, who is 6 years younger than me, very kindly offered to donate eggs for us. And so that our IVF journey changed, and then we used her eggs.
How did that conversation come about, Felicity?
We were trying to figure that out the other day. I'm an obsessive helper in most cases, and I think
you're the younger sister. All that means is that you're under the thumb of older one.
That's true. It started very young when my sister's like, "Can you come and turn my light off for me?"
And I
was, "Can you clean up my room because
exactly,
it's a mess?"
Exactly. So I think I keep a constant catalog of the things that I have that I may need to help other people with. I think I still do that. And donating an egg had always been something that having a child for someone had been something that I had thought, okay, you may be called on one day to do this. And I think pretty early on I had said to Beck, you know, of course, if anything ever happens, you can have my eggs, we can do this.
Yeah.
And I think...
So you came up with the idea first?
But probably before we'd even started IVF, it was just a known that Beck was welcome to anything of mine, including bits of my biology.
Yeah.
And she, at some point, I think I was actually surprised though when you said, I think we might need to use your eggs. And I was like, oh my gosh, that moment. Oh, okay, all right, we'll get started. But yeah, then we went into a very, very quick. I was still breastfeeding my second child, so I had sort of plans to make, and we thought, like, we're still doing that, so I'll test whether I have this chromosomal issue, because you kind of want to manage your expectations along the way, and you don't want to go wild with, great, you're going to, you know, have this great hybrid baby. So we sort of took it step by step and went, okay. They get that tested, found out that I didn't have it. We're like, okay, that's step one. And then you sort of
plus
continue.
You're younger, so your eggs are going to be better in
better
shape.
Yeah, I was 36 though at the time, so I wasn't super young. So I think, you know, that's right though. It's a series of separate hurdles. Like every time you think, I mean, something can go wrong at every step along the way, and so you try to manage that process a bit. I could have had the problem.
You didn't have a child then though, did you?
No, I had two already.
Oh, you already had two.
I had two, yeah.
How did your partner go with this?
Oh, he's awesome. He's from Pakistan, and I think
I'm wondering why that makes a difference.
Yeah. Oh no, so culturally, I think maybe IVF is not like culturally as
accessible.
Because I was
thinking might be stranger to him in a sense.
No, I think the sense of family and sacrifice and that of course anything he has this real attitude that if anything of ours belongs to everyone in our family, our door is always open. It's something that's been really great being his partner because. He comes with this sort of, I know that there's nothing that I could accidentally do too much of, which is a problem for me as a serial helper. I'm like, okay, there's a few people coming to stay in our house. I met them on the corner. I hope you don't mind. And he's like, of course not. So for him, it was really simple that it was just going to be something that we would of course do.
What about you, Beck? Do you... I mean, some people listening might think, hang on, this is a bit weird, isn't it? I mean, it's her egg in me. How's that going to how did that go for you?
It didn't worry me at all because I feel like we're very similar people anyway, and we live close together. Our families are very close. Our kids play together. It feels like a big, almost communal family anyway. So for me, it didn't. It felt like a nice thing to have a bit more of her with me and to have a child that, you know, looks like her and I can see similarities in their personalities and that's to me a lovely thing. Yeah.
She's two and she's a nightmare and I'm worried that she finds...
Hang on, Beck, does she look like Felicity?
She does.
she also looks like her.
Yeah, we look... Yeah, I mean...
That's a happy...
Yeah.
Yeah, Beck, so tell me about what happened then. So you said, okay.
So we all had to get counselling. So both couples had to get together and talk to someone about what process was involved, how everybody felt about it, how we would communicate it to the kids. And once that was, we got through that hurdle. And then the first egg she had an egg harvest, which was really successful, and she got lots of healthy. We got lots of healthy eggs from her, and then they did a. Is it a live implant? Is that what they call it? Where they put?
Yeah. I think it was because I want to talk about that with Peter in a moment. We'll see.
So a few days after they'd harvested and fertilized the eggs, they put one back inside me, and that was the one that took and became my daughter.
So it happened first time, right?
It did happen first time. We were really lucky. Yeah.
How common is that, Peter?
Well, it happens. Good eggs will work first go quite a lot of the time.
Yeah. Because I mean, each cycle is. It's involved, isn't it? Isn't it, Beck? I mean, your body's sort of, you know, sitting there on the slab, as it were, getting poked and prodded and administered to.
Yeah, and
in really, a way that can feel a bit disconnected with having a baby.
I imagine. Very disconnected and very and emotionally really a bit of a roller coaster too, because you feel like you're on this process and building up to something, and then especially with the first. Rounds with my eggs, the excitement and the anticipation and then the feeling of being let down and then having that process start again, it can be pretty draining.
The thing is, as I understand, Felicity, they had to get your cycle, your menstrual cycle, aligned with Beck's to make it work properly, which if I'm thinking about my high school biology would make sense because the egg's got to be taken at the right time and implanted at a similar time in the cycle, as it were. Mm. I thought this happened naturally as sisters anyway, doesn't it?
Apparently not.
but apparently not. Okay. So therefore they had to make that happen to you, presumably with hormone therapy, did they? And how was that?
Yeah, I presume it was hormone therapy. Yeah, it basically, well, to me, it felt like what I've always imagined menopause to be.
Really?
Like so it basically, I think I just sort of stopped. They've stopped producing hormones and put me into some sort of stasis, which was really the whole thing was fascinating for me. I have to say, I have the benefit of this not being. It wasn't my baby, so it was. I had a bit of distance from it, so it was just really interesting. I found myself at work with me and the other two 60-year-old women just going, oh, what's going on? I'm getting hot flashes. I can't. Can we just stop for a second? I can't quite concentrate on what exactly is happening here. Just give me a moment. And it was quite nice because I got a bit of a fast forward into what that's going to be like managing that change, and it was only for 2 weeks, so that was also extra nice. And then we sort of got onto the same cycle, and then so that we could have this live transfer instead of having, I guess, a frozen embryo, because as I said, every time you take a step, things can happen, things can go wrong. So that's, I think, was the best option.
That's
for
interesting.
Us.
So for you, it just felt like medical procedures.
Yeah,
Beck, for you, did it feel like? Because I'm thinking for you, it must have felt like medical procedures too. I mean,
oh, it definitely
it doesn't
did.
Feel like you're making a baby, does
no,
it?
No, it definitely no. doesn't. And no. it is very removed from anything real. And she was so fascinated in it that the point at which they had to sedate her to harvest the egg, she didn't want them to sedate her too much because she wanted to be able to see the screen and see everything going on. So she was just completely fascinated with
it. How is it done, Peter? How do you harvest an egg anyway?
You use an ultrasound probe which goes into the vagina itself and has a tiny needle attached to the tip which goes through the wall of the vagina into the ovary. So you can do that either with a general anaesthetic or sedation or...
Sounds incredibly painful, but...
A bit of local anaesthetic. And if it's done with local, many women who opt to can sit and watch the procedure themselves.
Really? Mm. So you harvest the egg from the ovary, not after it's been released from the ovary?
No, from the ovary.
Directly?
Directly,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very important because the timing of the maturation of the egg is very important.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm trying to remember my biology here. That's right, because the egg gets released in the ovary, travels down the fallopian tube to the uterus and, you know, gets fertilised on the way somewhere. Yep. But that process, I mean, that timing's critical, isn't it?
It is, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's very odd too because, you know, once they've put the embryo back inside me, I then went to work and it's... like nothing had happened, but something amazing had happened.
I want to
at
ask you
time.
About that, but first of all, I just want to get this live implant procedure is that essentially you harvest. So you've harvested Felicity's egg, not you, but the process. So Felicity's egg's been harvested, then it's fertilized in the lab. What at the same time? And is this what's
same
called?
Day? The same day. Yeah.
Okay, the same day, and then it's put back in the same day as well. Is it?
It's a couple of days later, I think.
Oh, sorry.
In vitro means in glassware, so it's fertilized in glassware. So it's the same day. The following day, you find out how many of the eggs are fertilized. So, if, for example, a woman has 10 eggs collected, she might find that only 6 or 7 of them fertilize successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're grown for 5 days, but not all will grow well for 5 days. Some will grow poorly, others will grow well.
So you select one that's grown well.
Yep, yep.
And put one, and so then one was put back in new bag, but without it being frozen. Okay.
But we also had to choose. I think they say that if there's different quality in the eggs, that you might want to choose the second or third embryo because it may not freeze as well. And so you have to choose whether you want the best egg or you want the second best egg or the third, which is very odd. Now when I look at my daughter and I think,
you'll always be able to say to her, you know, we chose the second best one.
Yeah.
So don't get tickets on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. When a lot of women report that, I mean, whether it's true or not in that sense, but a lot of women report that they know when they get pregnant because that's what they feel it straight away, pretty much. Is that how you felt?
No. I had no idea.
I don't mean at the moment of fertilisation.
No,
impossible. But they know pretty soon after.
I didn't. I mean, that's the other weird thing is that you find out that you're pregnant from a phone call because you've gone in and got a blood test and the centre will call up and say you're pregnant or not pregnant. So that's a weird way to find out too.
Technically, what does that mean, Peter? That the fertilised egg has been implanted in the uterus.
Well, the fertilised egg has been replaced in the uterus.
Right.
The next step that has to happen, the point where it most commonly doesn't work, is that the embryo doesn't keep growing and then formally implant by binding into the uterus itself. And that usually shows up with a hormone called HCG, which appears in the blood about 10 days after the embryo transfer.
That's the pregnancy test.
That's the pregnancy test, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so you keep your... So that must have been a very anxious period, isn't it? Oh, I mean, that's a real fingers-crossed thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was...
How did that feel?
I think I dealt with it by controlling... I knew when they were going to call, and I told my sister that they were calling the day later so that
That's pretty terrible. So, like, you're thinking... Well, if it's yes, they'll ring me on Tuesday.
I knew that they were going to ring me and tell me on the Tuesday, but I told everybody else it was Wednesday so that they weren't. I'd have some time to deal with it and be able to control the information.
But
so,
hang on, but you'd gone in what the day before, or the same day to test for the hormone.
So you get blood tests the whole way, like the whole way through.
Every day.
So. Yeah.
You're misunderstanding how smart she's been with this. that she knew she would get the result at 11:15 on a Tuesday, and told her entire family she would not find out till Wednesday.
Yeah, I was smart. Yeah.
Felicity, you've donated the egg. Bex got pregnant. That's terrific news. And then a month later, you get pregnant.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah, that's what my mum said.
Hang on.
Hang on. That's a bit many. But...
had you planned that?
I had wanted to have
more
kids.
So just to make it clear to everyone, you got pregnant naturally.
I did. Yep. I was okay with not having more kids, but I'd just gone through this with my sister, and I knew that the time was of the essence, and it didn't make sense to me to wait because I was already 36 at that point. But it turned out to be like a double blessing because we watched Netflix on the couch for the 3 months of our maternity leave.
So you had mat leave together.
We did. It was amazing. We were very, very lucky. And, you know, I mean, our kids just grew up right next to each other. So that's been really incredibly lucky.
Peter, as a matter of science, when you say you select the best embryo, what does that actually mean?
You can tell.
How can you tell?
You can tell by looking at an embryo which one has the healthiest cells. The cells have a regular appearance. The shape of an embryo is well developed with a nice big cavity of fluid in the middle which differentiates the bit that will become ultimately the baby from the bit that will ultimately become the placenta. And all of those predict which embryo has the best chance of implanting successfully and turning into a baby.
Hmm. The others are frozen and stored, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
And what happens to them in the end?
Well, they live in liquid nitrogen, so it's not like putting a bit of mince into your deep freeze at home.
No.
It sits at minus 200 degrees. And one of the biggest breakthroughs in IVF in the last decade or so has been the development of sophisticated freezing techniques, which mean that a frozen embryo has exactly the same chance of implanting as a fresh one.
Hmm. Well, we've talked about best eggs. What about sperm? Is that as important?
Sperm is very important in getting pregnant naturally. And one of the most common causes for couples having trouble conceiving is that the man's sperm count may be a bit low.
That they're not good swimmers.
They're not good swimmers, or the numbers may be slow. And that's a very, very common problem for couples to experience, with lots of issues for the couples themselves. But when it comes to IVF, we only need one sperm. For a woman to fall pregnant naturally, her partner has to produce 10 million moving sperm in each sample.
Mm-hmm.
But for IVF, we just need one sperm per egg. So IVF is a very effective approach for couples whose sperm count is quite low.
Okay. But in terms of, because you've talked about the best kinds of eggs and how that's age-specific for women in a way. But the same degree of quality control, in that sense, if I use a manufacturing term, doesn't really apply to sperm.
It's not as clear-cut for sperm. There are technologies that you can use to measure the DNA and the level of DNA damage in a sperm cell, but it doesn't seem to have quite the same effect as the quality of an egg.
Mm. All right, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Text 0467-922-702. Let's take a caller too. Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
G'day.
My wife and I went through IVF about 30 years ago, and it was quite, you know, like as you've been saying, it was quite traumatic for her because we tried about three times and we weren't. And unfortunately, we weren't successful.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, they didn't have any because it was reasonably new. They didn't have any data on the long-term effects of the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if your guests there can put some light on if they have done studies on the long-term effects of the drugs that they use.
Peter?
Yeah, that's a very important question, which I'm often asked. We know quite a lot now about the long-term effects of the medications as women have gone through IVF for 30 or 40 years and have been followed up for that time. We know a few things are clear. We know that the rate of breast cancer has not changed at all by doing IVF. We know that the rate of uterine cancer has not changed at all by doing IVF. We've got no data yet on heart disease or cardiovascular disease or whether that's affected. The area of concern is in the ovary. People have looked at the rate of ovarian cancer, and it does seem to be slightly higher in women who've done IVF. But we also know that women who are unable to have children for whatever reason have higher rates of ovarian cancer.
Uh-huh.
So it's very hard to sort that out from the direct effects of IVF.
Okay. Right, Chris, I hope that was helpful for you. Ben from Brisbane's texted saying, Phil, it's perhaps slightly off topic, but I'd be interested to know if sperm can be extracted directly from a man who's had a vasectomy and then IVF used for the fertilisation process as normal. Peter, is that a technological possibility?
Very straightforward thing that's very commonly done.
Because a lot of vasectomies are not reversible, or even if they were designed to be, that it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, one of the problems with reversing a vasectomy is that once the tube is tied off, the sperm are still being produced. So unless the body did something to eat up the sperm, men who had a vasectomy would end up with a couple of rugby balls in their underpants, which plainly doesn't happen. No. So to do with that, the body produces antibodies which attack the sperm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while the surgical repair of a vasectomy can often work very well indeed, the pregnancy rates don't match that because of those antibodies. And in general, a man who's had a vasectomy more than 8 to 10 years ago will have only a low prospect of success with a simple reversal.
Okay. But a much higher prospect of success with the retrieval of sperm surgically.
Yeah, technically it's a very straightforward thing to do, to retrieve a few sperm from the tube where the vasectomy's been done and to do IVF with that to create embryos and achieve a pregnancy.
Mm. Okay. Garima, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question for the two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two boys from 5 IVF cycles, and I feel that I need to do something in return for the blessing that I had. And I have thought about donating eggs, but I fear that I may not, I may get anxious later on actually seeing the kids being born to other parents, and also I don't know how to go about it. So if they would share their opinion or any information on that, that would be great.
I can't give you a huge amount of information on your feelings about that, because I think it is really different giving it to a family member, because I trust my sister and we have the kind of relationship that we're involved in each other's parenting anyway. So I've never had any sort of fear that I would see her do something or be a certain way with some of my biological material that I wouldn't have some sort of say in or be able to talk to her about. Having said that, it hasn't occurred to me yet. The kids are 2 and I can't really conceive of her being related to me beyond my being her aunt unless I really concentrate. It's probably not the same for a lot of people, but I find myself looking at her and willing myself to think, you are related to me, and it doesn't come naturally. So I was quite surprised by that. I'm curious a lot about how she's going to grow up, but I don't automatically associate her with my genetic material, and it doesn't happen spontaneously and it doesn't happen often that we consider it. But I think probably in terms of donating eggs, I don't know as much about that. I have also tried to donate eggs because I found the it really rewarding after I gave my sister eggs, but it's not actually that straightforward. And it is a bit fraught in terms of, you know, looking at the websites and thinking, I don't know this person and I might not agree with some of the things that they will do when they raise their children. And I think it's a legitimate concern and it's probably quite tricky to get past considering how much intimacy that you need to build with people that you're donating to.
Yeah. Does that help, Karima?
Yes. I think what she said regarding the relationship with the sister, I think that matters a lot. It's about trust. So I think I will keep that in mind.
Thanks for the call, Karima.
Thank you.
Good luck with the decision as well. Michael, hello. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, with the IVF basis, what's the difference in with premature babies? Is it lower or higher? Or
Peter, is it the risk of having a preemie baby? Is it higher or lower or the same with IVF?
There are two factors involved in that. One factor is the risk of a twin pregnancy. And I think I can very proudly say that we in Australia have led the way in that in putting back only one embryo at a time because there's no doubt that a twin pregnancy is by far the biggest risk of a premature birth. However, when you look beyond that and ask what is the risk of a premature birth in an IVF baby from one transfer, it's still slightly higher. So there is still a slightly higher risk of blood pressure problems and other complications in the pregnancy, but it's not a very big effect compared to the effect of twins.
Okay.
Are you considering it yourself, Michael, or?
Just a lot of my nieces and that are having kids at the moment and so forth, and yeah, so it's sort of, you know, it's sort of back of my mind and it's sort of I haven't got the kids yet, but it's just one of those things, like natural birth seems to be a blessing in our family, so.
Yeah.
Although one of my nieces was born 8 weeks premature, but she's now 24 now, and she's just had her second baby, and So
she's she's been fine. All right, Michael. Yeah. Nice talking. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222. There are lines free if you want to grab one. 1-300-800-222. Text on 0467-922-702. What's the story, Felicity, that you're going to tell? Or Beck, what's the story you're going to tell when they get old enough to wonder where they came from?
We already tell the story. We've decided that rather than there be a big reveal at some point, that we will just always talk about
just
it.
Just do it from the beginning.
Yeah. And so we've got this fantastic book about called Making Babies that is
What Makes Babies.
That is very general and talks about what you need, which is a sperm and an egg and a uterus. And we talk about where...
No. You need sperm, egg, uterus and big hospital.
Yeah.
Operating theatre.
Yeah, healthy Medicare system.
Sophisticated technology, large amount of cash.
Yeah. But they know now. My 5-year-old knows that the egg for him came from me and the sperm came from my partner, and that for his sister, the egg came from Felicity. So I think there'll be more questions and their understanding of it will become more sophisticated.
Yeah, of course.
But essentially they know now.
Their origin story. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yes, exactly. And as you say, they'll make of that later on what they want, because it's a much more complicated story, I guess, later on. Peter, what does it cost these days?
An IVF cycle normally costs about $4,000, so roughly, out of pocket.
Per cycle.
Per cycle, yeah.
How many cycles do you recommend? Well, sorry, maybe recommend's the wrong word. But for a woman coming to you for initial advice, what would you say? Look, if by the third or fourth cycle it hasn't worked, I would think about not doing it anymore?
Oh, certainly, yeah. I think that it's difficult because we do see plenty of babies being born on fifth and sixth IVF cycles.
Right. This is getting to be a lot of money by this
stage. It certainly is, and it's very unpredictable that some women whose case looks hopeless will come in and fall pregnant on the first cycle, while others who have all the markers in their favour will come in and unexpectedly find it very difficult and very tough. There are some circumstances, we've heard already from Beck, of circumstance where she didn't get any eggs at all suitable for transfer, which bodes badly. You know, in that circumstance, you'd be saying, look, it's probably time to stop. Mm. But if somebody's getting a lot of good embryos and they're just not quite taking, then the prospects of success are better. And very often that woman will make the decision to keep going for longer.
Mm. What about people who want to sex select? Because presumably that's a relatively simple matter for you, is it?
Technically, it's very simple.
Yeah.
Technically, you can take a few cells off the embryo, look at the chromosomes and tell
them. You tell straight away.
With 100% certainty, you can tell straight away. Ethically, in Australia, we're not allowed to do it, so none of us do. And when
do people ask you?
Quite commonly, people will do it in very varying circumstances. Some people will have two or three girls and will want to balance their family. The hardest situation I find is when someone has lost a young child and they come in and they've lost a son or a daughter and they want to have a son or a daughter to replace that child. I find that a very, very difficult circumstance indeed.
Wow, that's a pretty charged atmosphere, isn't it?
Very much so.
So they're saying to you, I want a son because I've lost my
son. I've lost a son, yeah.
What do you say?
Well, I simply say what the rules in Australia are, that we're just not allowed to do that.
Mm. Gee, I can imagine that'd be tough. Mm. Tough conversation. Casey's on the line. Oh, hang on. Casey, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, gotcha. Your wife's had two children through IVF.
Yeah,
And you did get some gender selection.
Yeah, well, we tried three times for our first, and we fell pregnant on our third, mm-hmm. which was a big surprise to us. But not long after, our IVF doctor, she told us it was the end of the road because we'd continue trying. So the second one just wasn't possible. So we went. We were asking about gender selection at the time, and basically, you just mentioned earlier that you don't do it in Australia. So and that's what that was the predicament we were in. So my wife wasn't happy being told that we couldn't do, obviously, doing gender selection. And the fact that being told that there just wasn't another baby for us. So we went over to America and tried three times in America as well. We were willing to do anything at the time just to have a little girl because our first one was a little boy. So we just travelled the world trying to make it happen. But unfortunately, those three attempts failed as well. So we thought IVF were right in saying it was the end of the road for our journey for children, but then came back and tried another two times and fell pregnant with our second. Well, I was going to say, unfortunately, it's a boy. No, not unfortunately, it's a boy. Like, you know, internally grateful that we had another child. But, we just went naturally and we had our second child. But, yeah, we were willing to travel and I was working four jobs at the time to try and get over there and make it happen. And it was upsetting, but, you know, we got our second child. But, you know, that's kind of where that story ends, really.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing that. It's a story that's full of emotion at every level. Thanks for that.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
Is there any plans? Because there's been a couple of headlines on TV over the last 12 months that, you know, that they're lightening the ruling and the, I don't know what the correct wording is, but the reasons why people may be able to go ahead with gender selection.
Okay. Peter?
Yeah, look, it's been a topic of major conversation around the country for the last couple of years. These rules are set by the NHMRC National Ethics Committee, the Australian Health and Ethics Committee, who met and reviewed all of this around about 12 months ago, as you say. And they acknowledged the fact that there were divided opinions within society. And certainly many of us who practice NADIS see cases where we think we'd love to be able to offer gender selection to save people going halfway around the world to have the family of their choice. But on the other hand, we have to be guided by an area as sensitive as this. We have to be guided by the principles that society lays down for us. And so the end result of that review was that the prohibition on gender selection remains and probably will remain for some time to come.
Right. And why does Australia only insert one embryo as opposed to other countries which will insert two?
For safety. You've heard already tonight about preterm birth.
Sorry, I recently tuned in about three calls ago.
Right,
sure.
Yep.
Oh, that's okay. Mm.
It's for preterm birth. Preterm birth is a very common complication of twin pregnancies. And for many couples who are struggling to have a family, the idea of two children is just the dream. But so often we see the reality of that, which is two tiny human beings in a neonatal intensive care unit fighting for their lives and their future mental function. And preterm birth is a terrible thing. And people in Australia, with the advent of freezing, which means that the frozen embryos will do just as well as the fresh, we now lead the way in terms of single embryo transfers and the safety associated with that.
Hmm.
Okay. When you put it that way, it makes sense. Yeah, because I'd only had explained when we were there, I said, well, they insert two. If one takes, they terminate the second, and you save your own cash.
Not as safe, no. Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Casey. Bye. David's on the line. Hi, David.
Hello, how you doing?
Not bad.
Oh, I got a question for you.
Yep.
I had a vasectomy about 16 years ago.
Yep.
And something you just said to me clicked in my head. I wanted to have kids about 8 years ago with my partner now.
Yeah.
But I thought I would have had to get a reversal.
Yeah.
But you're telling me that they can actually take the sperm out of my tubes.
Yep.
That's alive right then, and that the antibodies, and then put it into a. I'm really confused.
Let me
explain it again. Maybe I didn't explain it very well before.
He's the doctor. He knows.
Yeah. Awesome. You can't from that sample. You can't get enough to do artificial insemination with, because for a woman to fall pregnant naturally needs about 10 million moving sperm.
Yeah.
With IVF, if your partner provides 10 eggs, all we need from your testicle is 10 individual sperm cells, which is technically a very straightforward thing to do.
Okay, so she's older. She's in her early 40s. Chances are pretty slim with that.
Yeah, they are. That's the trouble, that it always comes back to the eggs and the age of the eggs.
And if she was to be donated an egg and that was inside her with my sperm, that would work, wouldn't it?
Technically, that would be possible, yep.
Okay, cool. I'll just throw that at my girlfriend. So
but it is quite a complex proposition.
you're going home with a whole new set of plans.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm nearly 50 now, so it's going to be a bit of a... you can imagine.
Have you had any other kids, David?
Yeah, we've both got three kids together. I mean, three kids, but not together. We've got three previous relationships.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have a kid with her, but... Oh, this just thrown a whole heap of ideas in my head.
Well, I think you should pour her a drink first before you mention it.
I reckon it'll be a couple.
Good luck to that.
Thanks,
but anyway, yes, it's technically possible from what we're saying. Wendy, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Well, thank you.
I've got a question about, is it true that there are more couples finding it harder to conceive naturally? And if so, why is that so?
Peter?
It doesn't seem that the biology has changed at all. I think what's happening is because as society changes, people are turning their minds to having children a little bit older. And that means that natural conception gets a little bit harder and more people are struggling with it.
Right, right. And Peter, you helped my daughter have her two baby girls, one 6 years ago and one 5 years ago.
That's lovely.
Well, how about that?
Yeah, so thank you. I'm a very happy grandmother.
Thanks. Thanks, Wendy. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Beck and Felicity, any more children?
No. I think Mum's listening.
Yeah.
Let's go with no.
Oh, dear. But just get back to this. So, hang on. So Felicity, Beck, your baby does look a bit like Felicity.
A lot like her, yeah.
But Felicity, you reckon it also looks a bit like Beck?
Yeah, most people.
You're already saying that, aren't you?
Most people who don't know, strangers will say, oh, my gosh, she looks so much like you. Mm. I mean, you probably can tell, and even the listeners can tell, we're not very different. Our voices are pretty similar. We have very similar mannerisms. It would be easy to pick it up from either of us. So it's quite easy and conceivable for her child to be very like us both at the same time.
Has Peter, over the years, as the profile of people, and I wonder these days, of course, with gay couples, whether or not they seek out IVF, do they?
Yeah, quite commonly. Yeah. Before I answer that, can I chip in the last question, the question, which is that we have many women who have babies with completely unrelated donor eggs, and it's amazing how often people tell them that the baby looks just like them.
Yes, well, I know. In the case of my own two daughters, of course, that although everyone said, "Oh, she looks just like you," I don't think that she thought that was a compliment necessarily. And neither, in looking back at the photographs now that they're adults, of course, was it true either? Mm-hmm. Just now, back on that question. Yeah,
yeah, no, yeah. It's a very common thing nowadays that gay couples will seek to have their families through the use of artificial technology in different forms. With relatively young lesbian women, it just needs simple artificial insemination most of the time, and often
without the need for IVF.
Yeah, without the need for IVF a lot of the time. When gay men are trying to have a family together, it's much more complicated. Mm. They have to find an egg donor and someone to carry the pregnancy for them.
And that in Australia is possible, isn't it?
It is possible. It happens.
Yeah, yeah. To have that, I mean, you can have someone carry the baby for you under some, but you just can't do it commercially.
That's exactly right. It's called surrogacy, where the woman carrying the baby is not the intended parent.
And that's right. And it's illegal to enter into a commercial arrangement for it.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, but anybody who wants to do it for reasons of goodwill can do it.
It's nearly always done for love.
Yeah.
It's done. It's a huge, huge thing to carry a baby for somebody else.
And of course.
It's nearly always done by somebody who loves the intending parents.
Mm. Sarah in Heidelberg says, text, are there more girl or boy babies conceived and born through IVF?
Boy babies are...
We know you can't do sex selections, yeah. But I mean, does it turn out...
It does.
There is a bias.
Boys are 50.0001% of the babies.
Is that right? We've got the edge. And how does that how does that compare with natural?
50-50 naturally.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Do we know why?
It's thought to be that male embryos grow slightly faster in the laboratory and therefore more prone to being selected for transfer. That's what people think.
Hmm. What about the future, Peter, just before we leave the whole topic? The technology has got better. Are there new technologies on the way?
I think that over the last few years, the pace of change has slowed a bit and we're now really refining what we did rather than anything particularly dramatic. The big breakthrough that people are talking about for the future is the use of artificial eggs or artificial sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So that somebody, instead of having to find an egg donor or a sperm donor, can take one of their other body cells and transform that into an egg to allow them to have a child that's genetically theirs. This can be done in animals, but the safety issues around doing it in humans still remain enormous, and that is still a long way off.
Mm. One other question that's come through on the text line a bit here too is this issue about transferring on genetic infertility, that if there was a reason for, you know, failure to get pregnant, that creating babies through this will create less fertile children. Is that a proper understanding of what's going on?
I think that's a widespread concern that's been there from the very beginning of IVF.
Mm.
The latest data are now only now starting to come out on the fertility of IVF children as they reach the right age where that can be measured.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that where IVF has had to be done because of male factor infertility, then more of the boys from that family do have infertility themselves.
Mm, okay. So, I mean, so that's right. So it is an issue in some ways too. All right, just back on who looks like who, Lyndall in Country Victoria says, I was adopted. But very often people would say to me, to my mum and me, how much alike we looked. Oh, dear. Well, there you are. Well, you're bound to have some very interesting Christmases and family gatherings, Beck and Felicity, I would think, from now on.
Yeah.
Beck and Felicity Barnes are sisters. They have been in the studio. Beck had an egg from Felicity and gave birth to her second child. With that, and Felicity returned the favour by having, well, not really returned the favour, but she got pregnant herself a month later anyway. So if that's not a good story, I don't know what is. Peter Ellingworth, it's been terrific to talk with you and get your technical expertise as well. Peter Ellingworth is an Associate Professor at the Medical and Medical Director of IVF Australia.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.